editing exercise then, just like popping it into your what you edit or what you cut,
right? Or if it's like it on the screen or whatever, like here, like this video is sponsored.
Oh, gotcha. Sponsored by banjos and
banjos, bass guitars, and whatever.
I mean, I should at least put like my good guitars up on the wall. That's like a $200 Jackson and a fucking banjo.
Wow, so we're finally talking about this country that I have, like, totally not any sort of bias towards. Oh, wait, hold on. I think I'm forgetting something. Whee! I hope everybody recognizes me.
What's up, y'all? This is Chief Keith, broadcasting live from the den of my house that I live in.
Yeah, Omar, Keith and I ran into each other at an Alluvial show in Brooklyn. Alluvial is West Howe's band. And I thought he looked familiar, and then he told me his name, and I was like, wait, you've been around for a long time. I totally know the name Keith Everett. And then we've kind of just like kept in touch a little bit since then. Turns out he's got a YouTube channel, and I even like looked you up a little bit and kind of stalked old YouTube and saw your audition for Pain in Exile and things like that.
Oh, no doubt. All right. No doubt.
Man. Yeah. That's taken a way back. I just talked
to like the whole band. Well, except for this. Well, no, that's an exaggeration. I talked to the keyboard player, Alan, who was once in it, and then Jacob, who was once in it. I guess who are both not original members. Right, like there was a different keyboard player.
Yeah. 2009.
Yeah,
it was the bass player from Moontooth, right? He was like the original Romanelli Exile.
Yeah,
bass player, and then
so funny.
Oh God, you had the two brothers, right? Who was like the keyboard player, and then
forgot everyone's names.
Whoever they are, I don't know them.
Yeah, I forgot all their names. Yes, but it's so funny how a bunch of us have just kind of stuck around doing the same thing.
Yeah, like, I agree. I mean, the whole New York City kind of community-ish, I guess you could say, between you guys, and then you got Mark Lambert, who's been kind of just floating around in cyberspace doing whatever. And
yeah,
you know, I've been a huge Moontooth fan. I actually saw them when they played at the Viper Room in Los Angeles when Dennis Rodman was at the show.
Wow. I remember that. I remember that getting on Instagram at some point.
Yeah, and then Dennis Rodman was like wasted out of his mind talking about like Kim Jong-un and hanging out with whatever. And it was quite the Hollywood experience, that's for sure.
That's nuts. I've been listening to those guys since the beginning. I used to be like just broke living in like hopping around Long Island and Queens and Manhattan, just like living in different places every couple months. And like with the little money I had, I would go and see them at like St. Vitus Bar. I would never really talk to them. It's funny because John, the singer, and I went to high school together, and we had Everforther had played with them once, like way out in like Eastern Long Island somewhere. And I'd go see them play. I'd be like, oh, that was sick. And then I would go home and not even like strike up a conversation, which was probably pretty stupid. I've gotten better at that since then. But I must have seen them like just 15 times around like the New York area over the years.
Such a great band. I mean, they have definitely been fighting for a long time to get to where they're at. And, you know, I actually saw them play at Welcome to Rockville, which is here in my hometown of Daytona Beach, Florida, which is kind of the biggest rock and metal festival, I guess, in the country, maybe. I don't know, but I guess it's what it is. But it was cool. It was cool seeing them play live, and they opened for Steel Panther, so that was pretty dope.
Yeah, yeah, and they got the Riot connection too, like the hairband connection through Nick as well.
Yeah, 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 definitely. Also, I love his guitars. Was it the Vigier or the French brand? They make great guitars.
Yeah, I was checking out some of their stuff online. They have a couple or at least one semi-hollow, like jazz guitar. I'm like, man, I gotta get some like sponsorships. Like, give me 10% off, and maybe I'll splurge $4,000 on your
guitar,
on your semi-hollow. Yeah, I don't really. I'm not even much of a gear guy. I had heard it. I think they make it, they don't have truss rods in their necks. It's just like a single,
really
piece. Is that full of shit? Let me see. VGA truss rod. We make the difference. Normally, this is why truss rod is used, but with the we adjust the. How the heck do VGA guitars have neck relief? With just enough that they don't need truss rods. So yeah, that, I don't think they have truss rods. Guitars with no truss rod.
Are they a composite neck? Is that?
They're carbon fiber necks.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. That's cool. That's really cool. They make really great basses, and I've always wanted one of their basses. But
how do you? I wonder how you adjust it then. Like, what's going to give it the bend?
A sledgehammer.
Yeah. No idea.
Yeah. I actually don't know. I just don't think they move at all because it's not wood. So, however, I guess it comes from the factory is how it's going to be for its life
expectancy. It's also probably like super laser scientifically straight because,
yeah,
however they're building it. Yeah, I've never played one, but that'd be cool. That'd be cool to get my hands on one at some point. So Keith, what do you do?
What do I do? Yeah. That's a loaded question.
So to clarify, I run into in Brooklyn, but you live in Florida. You do the You've got the YouTube stuff going on. You play bass, like.
So I like to consider myself a man of many hats. I do the YouTube stuff for Geography Now. I've been doing that for 6-7 years now. It's crazy because it's like I've seen it grow from like when I started, it was like I think we only had like 25,000 subscribers, which is still a lot, relatively speaking, and now we're at 3 million. So to see it grow that large over the years, it's kind of mind blowing. And you know, sometimes now when I go walking down the street or something, somebody might recognize me from doing the show, and it's like, oh, hey, how's it going? Yeah, I'm that guy that likes to get stoned and talk about music on the old internet. So there's that. And then also I'm a stagehand / backline tech. So that's kind of like my main real gig that makes, you know, money for
pays
me.
The bills. Yeah.
That's the bill payer.
You were with the Scorpions, right? You said?
So I was briefly up there just doing some audio stuff with the Scorpions. I just kind of got a phone call and they're like, hey, can you come up and you know, work this event at the Garden? And I was like, yeah, sure, cool, I'll fly out there. So I was just doing a bunch of RF and you know, frequency stuff, and yeah, nice. that's kind of like my day gig. And
No bands yet.
I'd love to just make playing in a band my full-time gig. Isn't that the dream, right?
You know, it is and it isn't. And I'll tell you why maybe in a second. Do you want to finish that thought?
No. I mean, to me, it's just like, yeah, as far as like playing in a band, it's like I just kind of want it to be a side thing for me in my life. I just would like to be a side thing where I have a lot of fun creativity wise and I don't have to have this existential pressure of being able to make a living at it. You know?
Yeah. It's a bit of a tricky, it's really a tricky thing. You know, I've like dabbled in the band thing. I'm not going to say like I really ever nailed it. You know, I practice and play a lot of guitar. I've gotten pretty good at the guitar. What I haven't gotten good at is having a band, you know? And I think a big part of that is luck and the reality, just some life realities. Like I think a lot of guys probably have the benefit of maybe living at home for an extended period of time, and they can kind of work out of, you know, their parents' place until you know, their mid-20s or something, and I didn't really have that option, or even later, which, no knock on that, that's, you know, some whatever. I would love to still have be able to live at my parents' house and save a bunch of money.
Sure.
If you are, chances are, if you've like put all this work into playing your instrument and writing all this complicated music, and your day gig isn't probably like the best paying day gig. Like I was coming out of, I've told this story a couple times, but coming out of that Madness guitar solo contest from nearly 10 years ago, I went almost right away. I went on tour with Heart Machine, and I kind of thought, oh, cool, this is the beginning of something. And I didn't make a dime on that tour. I wasn't paid. It was just kind of like this band doesn't really make a ton of money. We'll give you like a small per diem to eat, but that's about it. The Everforth, I did a couple shows. We were making just enough to, like, if a tire popped, that was all our money. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, to typical, you know,
yeah,
bottom, just beginning band stuff. I mean, for the hardcore bands I used to play in high school, I remember we did a tour in our shitty Saturns, and somehow we got through it, and you know, we're living off peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and you know, that whole thing. The labor of love.
Totally. And maybe I could have stuck it out if like I had somewhere to if I had a you know, I was in a position where I had to figure out a way to pay rent. So I would go home and not really have a job, and you know, for a while I was mooching off like a girlfriend, and who eventually just kind of was like, are you ever going to get a job, or do you just go on tour every few months and kind of leave me to pay the rent? And so coming out of this Everforth, right, and guitar solo contest and Heart Machine, I had to get a job at Barnes and Noble for like $8 an hour behind the cash register. And like that really fucking sucked. And I remember Jake from Periphery walking in one day, and he's like, this is what you do? Like, this is how you make money? I thought you were like a guitar player. I was like, dude, that's just the internet. I have like, this is it. This is the real world. I got to work at Barnes and Noble.
Isn't it kind of crazy how the internet can kind of give off this, I want to say fake facade of like what people's lives are like, you know, like just kind of glamorizing like, oh, you won the man's guitar contest 10 years ago. And, oh, he must be, you know, doing a lot of guitar player related stuff. But in reality, it's like, oh yeah, I work in the back of a kitchen washing dishes and trying to, you know, survive just like everybody else. That's what I actually started doing when I moved out to LA. So initially, my first gig ever, like I'll call it professional gig, I was the bass player for Danny Warsnop of Asking Alexandria. So I played on his first solo album. And there's like, oh, we're going to tour, we're going to do this, that, and the other. None of it really ever came to fruition. It's just, I got to play one show with him in Dana Point, California. And that was kind of it. But I thought I had made it. I was like, yes, I'm going to do it. I'm going to finally going to go out on tour and be successful and make a living at this. And I'm like, I just moved to LA, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. And then next thing you know, 2 weeks later, I'm in the back of this Mexican restaurant just washing dishes, trying to survive. And that ended up being me for a couple of years. But yeah.
Yeah, it's true. And I'm sure a lot of people are in a lot of like those Instagram guitar players are probably all in a very similar boat. Like when I've never asked them, but I'm pretty sure if I had the opportunity to ask Manus, like, hey, when you picked me to win that thing, did you think that I had like a lot going on? Because after that contest, they had asked me like, hey, can you record a bunch of demo videos and things like that? I was like, guys, I asked for a big favor from a friend just to do that one video. I don't know how to do any video stuff. I barely know how to do audio stuff. I just play the guitar. Like, I hope you know what you signed up for. You just kind of like, you selected me as the winner because of my ability, but the reality is I don't know how to do demo videos for shit.
Right. Yeah, I mean, same thing for me. It's like I'm trying to get my own YouTube channel going now and so on. It's like, even though I'm on a 3 million sub YouTube channel, I have no idea what I'm doing just as much as the next guy. It's like kind of, you know, luck of the draw. I'm trying to capitalize off of the thing that I've been able to build over the years, but still, it's like, I think if you go to my channel, I've got like 600 subscribers, something like that. But yeah, so I totally get you.
So did you start that channel like just more recently?
Yeah, it's been around for a long time. And after 2019, and I went and did a fan meetup tour around Europe with some other cast members of the Geography Now show, it really kind of inspired me to be like, hey, you really need to capitalize off this, because we were drawing about like 100, 150 people, you know, per meetup to wherever we went. And I was like, okay, this is like something substantial, and I'd like to kind of capitalize off this. And, you know, that's why I thought too, like, it'd be cool to have a band and then somehow spearhead this whole thing with a band. I've had a bunch of ideas, but right now kind of focusing on the YouTube channel is what I'm trying to do for the time being.
Yeah. Yeah. That's at least a piece of the puzzle I'm trying to figure out as well. Yeah. So 150 people at a meetup, again, back to like the facade that social media creates. Ever forthright, when we were playing shows back in the day, we would get to venues sometimes and there would be no one there, like an attendance of zero. And you know, we're kind of driving in this tour van, posting on social media, and people like, you know, blowing up the comments like, oh, come to my town, come here, come there. And we feel like such rock stars. And we get to some place in like Michigan, zero. We get to some place even in Long Island, like kind of where we were from. We played this one festival called Rose Festival. It was not a festival. Someone rented like a tiny little stage somewhere, and it was all local bands. And we were the headlining band. Everyone left for us. Everyone. There was one guy who stuck around for our set, Mark Valentino, who was like a fan for a long time. And he's probably still around, you know, hanging out, listening, waiting for our stuff. But one guy. And we're just like, where are we going wrong? I thought we were like competitive with Periphery and Animals and stuff. Like online, it looked like we were competitive with Periphery and Animals. Like,
sure, you know, I agree, man.
But we had zero attendance. Crazy.
That's the internet for you. I mean, who's another social media guy that's super popular? Can't I remember his name? He's the guy that he has a double neck guitar, but he just two hand taps everything. I can't remember his name.
Is he the Japanese guy?
No, he's Venezuelan. He went to Berkeley. Do you know Killian Duarte by any chance? Okay. Well, Felix Martin. Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember him.
Like he has a huge, or he at one time he had a huge online presence, but his attendance for shows was, you know, not so good. So I don't understand why people, you know, don't show up to shows.
But they listen to you online.
Right. Like I've noticed that too with kind of the gent prog-ish community. It's like nobody kind of goes out to shows. I mean, I do. I love shows. That's like what I live for. Mm-hmm. But at least from what I've noticed, it's like kind of hard to draw those people out of the woodwork, unless if you're like Periphery or Animals.
Yeah. Well, the difference too is that a lot of these bands, they're very good at making their music sound good, as they should be. And that's sort of step one, is you have to sound good in your controlled environment. You have to sound good in your studio, or that's really step one. And then you need to figure out how to have a live show. And I definitely noticed that a lot of bands don't have a good live show. You know, the reality of it is probably a mixture of money and experience. don't have their own sound guy, don't have all the fancy lights.
I mean, from my perspective, being in the backline world and so on, like, I don't really even think it comes to, I mean, yes, having a good sound guy is very key, but I think writing music that you can execute live is the most important thing. Because you take like a band like, I don't know, Brain Drill. Do you remember Brain Drill from back in the day? Like,
I can't really do that live.
Right. That's like something that you can only do on your computer and like quantize everything and just, you know, make it sound perfect. But I don't know. I mean, I think most bands are so focused on the internet now, and they're not focused on being a band per se. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, totally. Because that's where I am now with all my music, is writing it at home and recording it is, like I said, it's step one. You need to do that part. You're kind of dead in the water if you don't have a, I don't think you can really do this by starting with live shows. Maybe
not anymore. Maybe in the 70s.
Yeah. So you kind of have to start with your controlled environment, your at home thing. And then you need to figure out the live situation. So the live situation for me is I would love to figure it out. And that's the next step, but it does come with a whole nother set of challenges. You know, figuring out a way to get everyone in the same rooms. Sometimes it's 3 days of group texts. And sometimes people want to get paid for showing up. Like, oh, you want to have a rehearsal? Sure. Like, toss us each $50. It's like, fuck, I don't have $50 for each of you. And
right. It's kind of like you need people that are dedicated to the cause and understand what's kind of going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So finding those people, sometimes they're not so close, you know, like there's not, I wouldn't say there's like a surplus of guys that I could ask to play my music that are all driving distance from like the nearest practice space.
Sure.
You know,
well, I mean, also too, your music is quite challenging, and up there is like you have to be an actual player to be able to execute some of that stuff, at least in my opinion.
So it's a double whammy. One, the music in itself is hard, and then two, now we have improvising sections. So can you improvise like to the level of, you know, some of the better improvisers?
Yeah, no, totally. It's like, can you be Wayne Krantz or can you not be Wayne Krantz?
Yeah, so it's really, what I'm left with is a very small group of people who, you know, all the power to them. They kind of probably want to get paid for their time to learn the music and show up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it can't fault anybody when it's their livelehood, you know?
No, totally not.
And it also too, I mean, I'm 30 years old. I don't know how old you are.
A little older, 33.
Okay. But you know, it's the older I've gotten, the idea of like just continuously losing money show after show and doing an original project is hard to, it's getting harder to convince people to want to, you know, do that kind of stuff. I mean, for me, I'm like, I'm down. I don't care.
Yeah. So what is the perfect balance, you think, for having a band? Because what I know wouldn't work for me is having a band that's on tour half of the year. I have a family and a house and a mortgage and a steady set of income that requires me to be home.
Sure.
So, you know, this is not something I have an answer to yet. I haven't figured out the balance. I got to start somewhere, ideally someday, hopefully in the next year, with an actual show, one show. But, you know, looking out 5 years from now, what is the perfect balance for me? Like a show every other weekend. Maybe I only stick around the East Coast. Maybe, you know, 6 months of shows splattered around, you know, kind of the New York tri-state area. After that, get invited to like Tech Fest next year in UK or something.
Yeah.
You know, I think that would be a balance I'm happy with, where it's like, okay, you have three shows in, you know, some place, and then that's
sure.
It.
Sure. Yeah. For me, I've been thinking about this a lot. And I think it's just to play shows strategically in certain markets. Like, let's say, like I have some friends that live in Berlin, and I'm like, oh, hey, can I come play a show over in Berlin for, you know, a weekend or something like that? And then also kind of get to travel a little bit. That's kind of where I would like to be, is just kind of just do things more strategically, not be out on the road 6 months out of the year. Cause I mean, that's brutal. It's just grinding, and it's just nonstop, and you're living out of a van or a bus, depending on what size of a band you are. And I don't know. I just feel like flying to each place, kind of having a bunch of days off and playing the show and kind of getting to enjoy wherever you're at. That's kind of what I kind of envision for myself in a perfect ideal situation.
Yeah. And I think Jazz Guys too have figured it out a little bit better as well, because Jazz Guys kind of, they're like, yeah, I'll bring my pedal board and I'll disconnect the neck from my guitar so I can like throw it in a backpack. Like, I've seen more Jazz Guys guitar players doing that, just undoing the neck from their body. And then like tucking them into a backpack. So the body is in the backpack with the neck kind of, then that's their, cause they don't want to risk like losing anything on the plane or pay for, you know, extra baggage and stuff. So everything is literally a carry on. Their pedal board and their guitar is a carry on. And then they borrow an amp when they get there. They meet someone with like a Fender Twin or something. Setup is super minimal. You know, the drummer doesn't have a big thing. Miking and sound is super minimal. It's all very acoustic. And jazz gigs pay super well. You know, you got, I mean, a couple hundred bucks per guy per night. And for turnouts that are, you know, you're not packing like stadiums. Like, you might have, you might play in a room that has 75, you know, people in it, but also everyone kind of paid 40 bucks to get in. It's sort of like, oh, you're going to go see jazz tonight. It's 40 bucks. It's not 15.
Right. It's not going to like a hardcore show where it's like, oh, 10 bucks to get in through the door and, you know, you're some dingy room.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because I follow loads of like, you know, jazz guys on Instagram. Some of them are friends and peers, and I see them picking up and going, playing a couple of shows in Europe. It's also funny too, because jazz tours are like four shows. It's like, yeah, we have a show in Poland, Germany, Spain, and then France, and then we fly home. It's like, who's paying for this? Like, what? I mean, it's got to be pretty good guarantees.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the just more people just go to shows overseas, I feel people are more appreciative of it, especially jazz and stuff like that. More so here. I mean, I can only speak on behalf of the Florida market, and Florida's kind of like, eh. So like, I mean, if you were to have a jazz gig here, you're probably only going to get paid $100, $150, depending.
Aaron Marshall posted something, I think yesterday, saying like, they're playing some shows in the Ontario area. And instead of looking for their booking agent to fill like a full bill, they're looking for local bands to play. And Aaron's kind of argument for doing it that way was that the turnouts are not what they used to be 10 years ago in Ontario. And I just thought that was really interesting, because I've been, you know, preparing for this Ever Forthright release. And, you know, I don't think about it so much with the Noah band, because it's new and I'll take whatever I can get. But with Ever Forthright, there was a point where our fans were 14, 15, 16 years old. And all those people, if they've stuck around, are now in their mid-20s and approaching 30. And like Jacob Umansky, he's like, oh man, you guys put that out like when he was 16.
Yeah, you were writing Tech and Flux when he was like 14 is what he said.
Yeah. So he was just a kid, but he was listening to Ever Forthright. And so, you know, that was a piece of our fan base. And so let me go back to this. So the intervals thing, you know, turnout is less in Ontario, is less than it was 10 years ago. I'm wondering if there's like a kind of a bell curve that kind of goes with the band and how what they look like and how old they are. Like, you know, I kind of look like a 30-year-old guy now. Am I
you know, are you too old? Are you aging out of the
aging out? Yeah, like does a 17-year-old aspiring guitar player look at me and go, oh, that guy's like old. I don't want to, he's not my role model. My role model is a 20-something-year-old guitar player, not a 30-something-year-old guitar player.
Yeah, I mean, not to call Tosin old, but look at Tosin. I mean, he's what? And he's got to be at least 40, at least on his way to 40.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's tons of kids that are aspiring to be just like him, buying 8-string guitars every day.
That's true.
You know, that's so true. I don't think it's necessarily an age thing. I just think that, you know, there's a 10-year stint for bands or like a genre per se. Cause like in the mid early 2000s, I mean, remember how big post hardcore was? And you had like, you know, the whole like Coheed and Cambria, you know, Fall of Troy stuff. And now that's kind of just whatever. Like, I mean, non-existent. I mean, maybe I guess you have Dance Gavin Dance. They're the ones that survived, but I don't know. I don't know kind of where I'm going with this, but
yeah. So I mean, there's a lifespan. It's so funny too because I've only kind of tuned into Rick Beato in the past couple months, like figuring out who he is and what he talks about. And he just did a post called "Nothing Lasts Forever" and talks about how like the average career being a vague term, any career is like 5 to 7 years, and then you kind of move on to something else. I don't know how true that is. I haven't seen the studies or resources or anything like that, but he just kind of gave some life examples. He was like, yeah, I was a teacher for 7 years, and then I was something else for 5 to 7 years, and then I was a music producer for 5 to 7 years, and the world and the market changes, and so you adapt to that. And so maybe there's a lifespan to this kind.
I don't want to say that there is a lifespan because it's like it's one of my favorite things in the world. I mean, I just got this like Liquid Tension experiment album.
That's an old one.
OG.
Yeah. And well, they just did a reprint of it, and it's got this limited edition like Haze Splatter vinyl. And I'm a huge vinyl head. I love collecting vinyl. But like, I still love listening to old Dream Theater, Liquid Tension Experiment stuff.
So Prague is, maybe Prague isn't going anywhere, but it definitely morphs.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look at Porcupine Tree. I mean, they just released a new album. I don't know if you're a Porcupine Tree fan or
no, not really. I'll check. I gotta check them out though. This is like the third time I've heard about Porcupine Tree in the last month.
I've been a huge fan for a long time. I mean, between them, Opeth, and Dream Theater, to me they're kind of like the OG prog guys of, you know, for me.
It just makes me wonder how many Periphery records can there be, how many more Animals records can there be, how many more I'm just asking the question because I want to know the answer. I hope there's many.
How many times can we hear riffs that are extremely similar?
I guess that's really freaking loud.
Right. Like where I think Tosin kind of stands apart from the majority of the scene is that since he does have such a great musical sense and he's a great classical guitar player and stuff like that, he kind of can break away from just, you know, normal gent stuff. But
I don't want to toot my own horn, but the stuff that I just recorded that I should be out sometime around like October, November, I think is awesome. Like, I really like the stuff that I just wrote.
Hell yeah, I'm super excited to hear it. And also I'm excited for the new Ever Forthright stuff. I mean, I remember when I was going to Berklee College of Music at the time, I played in a band called Yantra. And I think I was trying to get on a bill with your band in Rhode Island somewhere a million years ago.
Yeah, I remember where we used to play in Rhode Island. I forgot the name of it. I know exactly what it looks like, though.
I'm super excited. Like I said, I don't think gent's dead. I just think we need to focus more on songs. I think that's the one thing that everybody kind of got lost in the sauce was writing guitar riffs that go to 11 and not enough focus on the song itself. Is that...
Yeah.
Because I noticed that with Mastodon now. Like, Mastodon's kind of going in this kind of more classic rock, prog vibe. I mean, they have been for a while since, what, Crack the Sky. But you got a band like Ghost, too, now, that are more song-oriented.
Yeah, ever since I heard Moontooth, I always thought they had it. I was like, this is the full package. Like, these are good songs. They sound heavy.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I'm yeah. still, like... their biggest cheerleader, hoping they blow up. I mean, they should. Yeah. I mean, if I was a label, I'd be like, hey, here's $1 million. Go have fun.
Yeah, why is it so damn hard? Why is it so damn hard to do that? I still don't even really know what labels do. Like, can I just go to a bank?
Like, take out a loan for your business?
Take out a loan? Or, I mean, I guess they have, like, the connections and stuff, right? But, yeah, I don't know. I just kind of feel like a label is an expensive bank. Like, yeah, here's 10 grand to go record something. That'll be 12% interest. And, you know.
Yeah, have fun paying us back.
Yeah, and it compounds daily. And go to a bank and they're like, yeah, 3% interest, pay us back when you want.
Yeah, I guess I've been thinking about this a lot, is I just want to figure out how to merge the YouTube world with a band and have it be successful. Like, because you look at, like, a guy like Rick Beato, who has 1 million, you know, subscribers, fans that watch his stuff religiously.
I think 3 million.
Okay, he's at 3 million now. But, you know, like, imagine if he had a band and now he has, like, he can sell something to, you know, 3 million people. And let's say if you work in a 10%, you know, number, so that's, like, what, 300,000? So mm-hmm. that's 300,000 album sales. I don't really know too many top artists that are kind of even doing those numbers today. You know, I feel like it's totally possible through, like, Patreon and doing stuff like that. I believe that it can work. It just, it hasn't been done yet. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah. I was just talking to Javier Reyes the other day, and I was just kind of asking, okay, so where's the money now when an album comes out? Like, because you're not selling CDs, like, you're selling vinyl, but those are expensive, and you kind of have to know the demand of who's going to buy your vinyl before you print, like, a ton of vinyl. You don't
know. Yeah, you can't just have
a bunch of a backstock of vinyl, because that's your money. So what are people doing? What are people buying? And he was like, well, there's like merch. And but he was telling me, you know, on tour with someone like Chan will crush it on merch, but you know, Animals could be the headliner, and they're not doing like, you know, they're doing like a fraction of what Chan is selling for merch. And that could be like a generational thing. Like, Chan's fans are probably younger, more fun. The Chan merch is probably a bunch of tie-dye, and it's, whereas, like, you know, I don't think I've worn like a prog band shirt. You're wearing one right now, but
oh yeah,
but Rush, that's almost like a vintage, it's like you wear a Rush shirt and it's like, oh yeah, Rush, you know, high five at the bar or something. You wear, right, yeah, you wear like you know, like a modern day prog band shirt that no one knows who the fuck.
A Periphery shirt. They'll be like,
what is,
like,
that?
Virginity cool shielding game.
Exactly. Yeah. So what was my point? Yeah. So then, like, where's the money for a prog band when an album comes out? And he was kind of just telling me, like, tabs, you know, you put out some music, you want to learn your parts, you sell tabs and sheet music.
People still do Guitar Pro. Is that still a thing too?
I think Guitar Pro sheet happens. It's a new thing. But I'm like, man, I'm so busy. All I want to do is play the guitar. I don't want to sit down and have to, like, tab all this stuff out to make
extra dinero for, you know, your living.
Yeah. And it's like, is it even worth my time? Like, the money that I'm going to make on it? Like, if I crunch the numbers, and like take a look at all the money I sell from tabs and compare that to the hours I've worked on it, it's probably going to come out to minimum wage. Like,
I sure. Well, I think that's why, you know, that's when you go cruise over to like Manhattan School of Music and you got some guitar hungry guy who wants to do a bunch of transcriptions.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, hey, you want to do this and I'll pay you $100?
Freshman.
Yeah. If you want to earn your stripes and,
yeah. Maybe if it's good enough, I'll take you on tour with me one day. Little does he know, I don't go on tour.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to be a big rock star? Yeah. Yeah. Play your millions.
You see my followers? You see I'm up to 3,000 followers? See that?
You'll be huge, kid. Don't worry about it.
We're just scratching the surface. He's like, oh my god, this big shot guitar player asked me to. Yeah.
Oh, he won the Mayones guitar competition 10 years ago. And next thing you know, it's just gonna be a Mom,
what are you doing? Oh, Sonny, I'm so happy for you. Yeah, poor kid.
Question for you. Do you think kids today should still enroll in music school, or do you think music school at this point is just a complete waste of time and they should spend their money investing into whatever original project they want to do?
I think that just different for person to person. Like, it depends who you are, it depends how you learn. Like, I think if you're gonna enroll in a jazz program, play jazz. Don't do what I did and like half-ass the jazz piece and like spend the other half of your time writing prog metal. Like, go and really learn jazz and play jazz. If you're interested in starting a prog band, don't go to a jazz school, just take some private lessons. Like, yeah, take a couple of private lessons with your favorite jazz guitar player. They're all teaching. You can reach out to all of them on Instagram. They'd be happy to give you some lessons. But yeah, if you're going to enroll in like a 4-year program, do what the program is. Be passionate about. Yeah, do it because you like the topic of that program. Don't try to makeshift it too much, which might be a little bit. I mean, I can only speak for like a jazz program. I think I would have learned a lot more about jazz if I had just focused on jazz, but I was trying to be that obnoxious, like, oh, I do things my own way, you know, kind of sure. guy.
I mean, that's what happens when you're young. I think it's one of those things where it's like, because when I went to Berkeley, I was like, I just want to play in metal bands and, you know, tour the world. That was my whole goal. And that's why I auditioned for Pain in Exile, which rest in peace. But yeah, like, and I was fortunate. I came from a really great private instructor. His name is Dave LaRue. Plays bass for John Petrucci on a solo album and, you know, all that stuff. So I had a really good foundation. And then when I went to Berkeley, I just kind of did the young guy thing, I guess. And was like, ah, fuck. Dude, these teachers don't know nothing. I'm going to go try and tour the world. And,
yeah,
you know, I wish I had stuck around. That's for sure. But.
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes think about going back to school for music and like doing a master's in performance or something like that, just to revisit the traditional jazz thing. But then the other part of me is like, you know, half your friends have master's degrees in jazz and they'd be happy to play with you if you just give them a phone call.
Right.
Like,
I mean, and it doesn't really mean anything at the end of the day getting a master's degree. I mean, it's just to say that you went through the studies and did it.
Yeah, that's the other part. It's also expensive, so it doesn't really outweigh it, but it does cross my mind sometimes. It's like a means to force me to like do some. Now, maybe when my son's a little older, like if when they're, you know, in high school and I have free time, like, you know what, whatever, I don't have student loans anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I'll go blow a bunch of money on a useless master's degree in jazz performance. Why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
That's cool. I really do think music education, though, is important for any musician. I think everybody should get a solid background in basic theory, you know what a triad is, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, but that being said, some bands are great, like, just not knowing what they're doing. Like, even that, I think, is, you can't change people. Some people will learn it. Some people won't learn it. But if your chances are, if you're listening to me and you want to play like the way I play, you have to learn theory.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no other way.
Yeah. If your favorite guitar player is, you know, Kurt Cobain and you love like, you know, Nirvana and that whole 90s grunge thing, and that's like the kind of music that you're into, you probably don't need to learn.
Yeah, of course. I mean, look, I mean, if you want to learn a Machine Gun Kelly riff or whatever, now that he's the new popular, I guess, guitar player for people. I don't know.
Does he even play the guitar?
He has a new signature Schecter. It's like this hot pink Telecaster single pickup guitar. But
maybe I'll play that.
Another question I actually have for you. What was your experience like going through or learning music in the public education system of New York? Does New York have a pretty good emphasis on those programs and stuff like that?
Yeah, my high school was I think one of the best high schools for music just by chance. I think there was something in the water that for some reason my class and a couple classes ahead of me and a couple classes behind me, I don't know what happened with it since, but so many of us went out to like New England Conservatory, Purchase, Manhattan School of Music, Berkeley. Like there was just an explosion. For all sorts of instruments, piano, guitar, drum, sax. And then also you look at all the bands that have come out of Long Island, like Pain in Exile, Ever Forthright. And, you know, you look at the individuals in that band. Alan Hankers, the piano player from Gia, went on to do his PhD in composition. And
yeah, he's on a whole other level.
Yeah.
He's an amazing keyboard player.
Yeah. And Jacob and myself and the Moontooth guys, you know, and you know, like those guys are we're all sort of our own breed, you know. Like Nick Lee doesn't play like myself, but we love, you know, I love Nick's playing nonetheless. And you know, Mark doesn't play totally like me, but I love Mark's playing nonetheless. And
yeah,
you know, all that stuff. So I don't really entirely know how that has worked out. Maybe it just kind of like it's a fire that started and then it just kind of like burned a little bit, you know, and it's kind of spread and friends talk to friends. The next thing you know, like we've all kind of influenced each other by some like third degree of separation without even knowing that we did it. But then we also have like NISMA. I don't know if other states do that, but like the New York something something Music Association.
New York State School Music Association.
Yeah. So like just about every kid does NISMA. They go and they learn a piece and they go and perform it in front of a panel of judges and they get rated on their piece. This like ranges from like hot cross buns when you're like a kid, you can go and perform in front of a panel of judges and all the way up to, you know, being in like the all state, you know, being an all state level. Yeah. Like being like one of the best of the best. So that's instilled at a pretty young age too. And I'm pretty sure you have to learn an instrument. And if you don't, you get put into general music. Oh yeah, this is all coming back to me a little bit now. So fourth grade, I had to choose an instrument. I chose drums as my first choice and flute as my second choice. And thankfully I got my first choice. I mean, I was like 7 or 8.
Yeah.
I was just like, I don't know, flute. And then you kind of stick with it throughout. So like by the time you're a senior in high school, you've been playing since you were in fourth grade. That's, you know, it's quite a lot of time. Even if you didn't care about it, you're in band class every single day, and band is every day.
That's cool. I wish Florida would have done something very similar. I also think too, just it's really important to have a good teacher, just overall, no matter what, like no matter what school you go to, having a good teacher.
I still take lessons.
Same here.
Yeah, I don't.
I was studying with Steve Jenkins. For a while. Yeah, he's a monster, man. I know he did the Stimpy Lockjaw stuff for you, that album, and amazing bass player.
Yeah, he's sick. There's just so many sick musicians. It's like, man, I just wish I had a trust fund, and then I can write like a new album every month, play with a different bass player, play with a bit different drummer. Just kind of like, just doesn't work like that though. You know, you gotta you gotta make ends meet, and then, you know, studio time is expensive. It's like a few grand to get into a studio to record some music. I mean, if you can do it from home, God bless you, but
yeah, most of us can't, because we don't want to put in the time and effort to learn all the software and all the programming and all that stuff. So it's like,
yeah, for me. That's the same for me too. I've gotten good enough at it to engineer some stuff at home and send it off to someone else to make it sound better. But like I said, I just want to play the guitar. I don't.
Yeah. I mean, you got into music because you wanted to play music. You didn't want to be an engineer. You just wanted to play guitar. I mean, that's the same thing with me. I just wanted to be a bass player. So yeah. I started playing bass.
Let me ask you. So then probably got to start wrapping this up. I want to have a like YouTube thing be a part of, you know, what I do. I think it would be one, it would be fun. Two, would be educational. I think I've always been a pretty good teacher. I'm pretty good at explaining stuff. I want to, you know, I want a YouTube channel that could thrive and, you know, attract people that have an interest in learning to play like this, the way that I play. Besides it being just like a fun venture, I would like it to monetize somewhat. Do you have any insight into at what point a YouTube channel actually starts monetizing?
Yeah, I do. I know that I think it's once you hit, 1,000 subscribers and a certain amount of hours on your YouTube channel, like if from videos being played, then you can allow monetization of the videos. Like there'll be like a thing in your YouTube, mm-hmm.
I think
channel thing.
I think like I see ads on my stuff really sparingly. Like I think I even played a podcast thing that Omar and I did a week or two ago, and an ad came across. I was like, oh shit, what is that? Like a cent? Did I just make a penny?
Yeah, and, man, that's CPN coming in hot. Yeah.
But what about, you know, 3 million followers? Is that a giant paycheck, or is that still just chump change? Yeah,
I mean, I would say that if you're at that point, the AdSense is just the kicker. It's not even like what your main money comes from. It, like, yeah, having 3 million subscribers and hundreds of thousands of views regularly, it definitely generates money, but the money that you get from YouTube is just supposed to be like a little bit. And then where the real money comes into play is when you have sponsorship deals. So like, let's say if you got sponsored by Liquid Death, and Liquid Death's like, hey, make sure if all of our cans of water are in your video, we'll give you, you know, $30,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And then
that's just an editing exercise then, just like popping it into your, what you edit or what you cut.
Right. Or if it's like on the screen or whatever, like here, like this video is sponsored.
Oh, gotcha. This, gotcha.
You know,
sponsored by banjos and
banjos, bass guitars, and whatever.
I mean, I should at least put like my good guitars up on the wall. That's like a $200 Jackson and a fucking banjo. So already I've got some room for improvement. Jeez, that's why I've never been sponsored.
Yeah, put your mayones up there. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. I don't know, mayonnaise, whatever.
They offered me a sponsorship that I signed when I had won that contest, and it was 50% off any guitar once a year for 2 years. So I couldn't just like spend $100,000 on the guitars and go resell them on eBay or something.
Yeah.
I was like, guys, your guitars are $5,000. I work at Barnes & Noble. I can guarantee I will not buy one of these in the next 2 years.
Sure, let me sign this. Yeah, okay. I know I'm never going to buy one, but it's cool. That's cool. Resume.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, I really think you should be on the Abbasi roster, man. I think you would go great. I'll definitely put in the good word to Ivan and friends.
I've reached out to Ivan just to kick that a little bit. I really am interested in that new one that they just put out, the Strat looking one.
Dude, dude, the Strat looking one's really sick. I'm a big fan. It'd be cool to get like a fat Strat version of it, you know, like a 7-string.
That's kind of what I would need, actually. I would find a way to make a 6 work, but for my music, I would need a fat Strat 7. But I use the coils all the time in recording. I love like a heavy coil sound. I think
it sounds sick. Sure. As far as like making money from YouTube and all that stuff, Patreon is crucial. I would say having a Patreon where like a list of things where people can, you know, get like have a $60 tier where you offer a guitar lesson, a one-on-one guitar lesson and stuff like that, you know, for people that like watching your podcast and want to learn from you, you know.
Yeah, it's really a choose your own adventure. There's no one size fits all. Like it's really crazy how much variety there is to this.
Because there's so many options, at least for me, it's like it's hard to kind of choose whatever destiny, you know, I'm supposed to go down. So it's like also too, there's just so many websites. Like you have like Subscribestar, which I guess is the competitor to Patreon.
It's Flatfiv is like the music focused one.
I didn't even know that existed.
I think this is the one that Rick Beato is on, Flatfiv.
Cool. I'll definitely have to check that one out. But yeah, getting the sponsorships. That's if you want to make money doing this and be the guy that has the Lamborghini making the 7 figures a year and, you know, whatever. That's where it's at. Because you look at a guy like, I don't know, like Casey Neistat, like he's made fucking gazillions of dollars doing YouTube videos and sponsorship deals and whatever.
I also don't think I have like the YouTube pop.
Hey guys, click like and subscribe. Comment and like, now.
Multiple angles. Like I'm here, come on.
It's like weeks and weeks of editing the same one video too.
Just to get it, yeah.
Yeah, and they have like 6 editors just working on it and whatever. But I don't know. You know what, man?
It doesn't need that though. Honestly, the channels that I like. That I actually like to follow, the music educational channels they're pretty straightforward and simple. It's got like a clear view of the neck and maybe some tablature to follow along with. That's probably what I would, you know, try to do.
Yeah, and also too, I think there's a huge void in the market right now for people talking about world music and talking about, you know, music from different countries, kind of like what I already do, but I don't really go into extreme depth about it because it can be extremely complicated, that shit that goes over my head. But I think there is a huge market out there for people that, you know, would love like song breakdowns of, you know, Eurovision songs, for instance, you know, for people that live in different countries, and you know, you could go over like the chord structure, whatever, just ideas. That's all I got. Sorry.
Man, it was cool having you.
Yeah, it was great talking to you and great to see you. I'm happy you're doing well in New York, and you know, stay warm this winter. I'll pray for you. If you ever want to come down to Florida, you guys, either of you, you're always more than welcome to come down here.
I'll take you up on that.
Yeah, we can go to Universal Studios. Like my aunt can get us some tickets. We can go hang out and ride all the rides and
sick.
Get day drunk or something.
All right, man. So yeah, we'll be in touch. I'll catch you on the internets.
Cool, man. Later, dude.
Peace.